This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Love it when we can help break news here on Civic Media. We're going to jump right in this afternoon, folks, with no further introduction, which is rare for me. Usually I like to tell you what we got going on the show today, but I'm going to save that for a little later because my special guest right now is Professor Charles Franklin from Marquette University Law School. Their pollster extraordinaire, Marquette, just released just minutes ago, it became public. Their newest poll that has just been out in the field. This is the last poll before we will go to the polls for the actual tally of votes. Welcome, Professor Franklin. What can you tell us about where Wisconsin sits in these critical presidential, Senate, and congressional elections?
Well, I think people will be shocked to learn that it's a very close election.
Shocked, I say.
Yes. In the presidential race, we have it at a one-point Harris lead, 50-49, with likely voters. That includes people who are initially undecided, but we ask if you had to choose, what would you do? When we let those people stay undecided, it's still a one-point lead, 48-47, with 5% undecided. I think that 5% is worth noting because that's a lot bigger than the 1 point separating the two candidates. And how those people make up their minds over the next 6 days, who to vote for or if to vote, that's easily enough to sway this race. Also, the margin of error for the poll is 4.4 percentage points. So a 1 point lead with a 4 point margin of error certainly means we don't have any clear indication about the lead. When we look at the Senate race, it's a 2 point lead for Tammy Baldwin, 51-49. Or with undecideds, it's 48-45 with 7% undecided. So in both of these races, the undecideds are enough to tip the balance. We'll see which way they tip in about 6 days from now.
I appreciated your statement, Professor Franklin, to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that it should not surprise anyone if Donald Trump wins, and it should not surprise anyone if Kamala Harris wins. I appreciate you pointing out this tight race. Just because one or the other side wins doesn't mean that something bad happened in our election. It means it's a tight race with people voting in great numbers for both candidates. Speaking about these undecideds, do you have a sense from the polling about who are these low propensity voters? Are these people who don't really a party affiliate? Who are they? Why are 5% seems like a lot?
Yeah, it is, especially after all this campaign. But they are people who are conflicted in ways that make a lot of sense. Mm. So people that dislike both candidates, that's about 9% of voters now. And those folks, over 40%, say they haven't made up their minds. They're undecided about how to pick the lesser of the two evils as they see it. Another group is independents. About 21% of them are undecided. Makes sense. They're not partisans by definition. And finally, Republicans who are conflicted over Donald Trump. About 13% of Republicans have an unfavorable view of Trump. That's down from 30% a year ago, by the way. But that 13% is really troubled. Again, 42% of them are undecided. Of those who've made up their minds, about 4 or 5% more voting for Harris than for Trump. But it's clear that almost half of them just are saying they haven't made up their minds at this point.
So based on your experience, especially given the polling that you have done over the 16, 20, and now 24 cycle, Professor Franklin, I'm curious, do you have any sense, statistically based or instinctually based, and you can certainly distinguish between the two, if the undecided voters may be more susceptible, or whether these, what I'm going to call relatively minor media blips that are happening right here at the end, may have some sort of outsized impact simply because people are waiting until the last second. We can think of, Kamala Harris today disclaiming Joe Biden's apparent reference to some set of Trump voters as garbage, or the explicitly racist jokes told at Madison Square Garden. Do you expect them to have some sort of impact or sway?
Yeah, this is in an extremely close race. You worry about any event could tip the race a little bit. What I can tell you, though, is in 2016, when the Comey letter came out about Clinton's email server on the Friday a week before the election, we saw in the exit polls, those people who said they decided in the last week broke heavily for Trump, giving him over 60% of their votes. Those people in 2020 who decided in the last week broke almost as heavily for Joe Biden at the end. So I think the main lesson here is it's really unpredictable which way late deciders go. A big event might tip them uniformly, but it's just awfully hard to know precisely because they're conflicted and they're having so much trouble making up their minds.
How do the third party candidates fit in, especially in the presidential race, Charles?
Yeah, in the presidential race, they're doing a little better than they did a month ago, which is a little surprising. A total of about 9% say they'll vote for a third party candidate. For Kennedy, that actually tipped up a little bit to 5% for him from 3% a month ago. The others didn't move very much. Usually the third party candidates drop off, and that's what was happening until this month's poll. As of late September, they'd continued to decline. I think they reflect this still difficult choice that people feel of those who don't like either candidate, those who are unhappy with the Biden record, but also unhappy with Donald Trump. Those kinds of conflicts are driving some people into the third parties. Also, there are people who are genuinely just anti-Democrat and anti-Republican who are looking for a third party that they think would reflect their values better than the major parties.
Very briefly, setting aside those undecided voters that are moving towards third party candidates, has your polling or experience indicated to you that those third party voters understand very clearly that their third party vote is effectively robbing them of the opportunity to weigh in one way or the other with one of the candidates that will win the election?
I think that became very clear after the 2016 election, when 5.5% voted for third party candidates. But 4 years later, only 1.5% voted for third party candidates. I think that was a lesson that in a really close race, voting for a third party may reflect what you want, but it may also tip the race. And we saw that actually from 2000 yes. to 2020, 2004, the third party vote dropped off a lot. But 2016 is 8 years ago. So people under 30 generally didn't vote in that election. It's a fading memory at this point, and we'll see where the third party vote really ends up next week.
Very briefly, I know you have to go, Charles. Of those undecided, what do you think candidates could do to convince them? Or is this just a point where these people have to make up their minds? I mean, is there some one or two things that's preventing folks from deciding?
I think the candidates have already said and done almost everything they could do. Outside events or a flub of some sort could tilt it a little bit. But I'm really just seeing this conflict between people's partisanship and how they see the candidates, and that's just a real difficult thing for people to cross over and vote for the other party if they dislike their party's nominee, or they don't like the record of the party, or they disagree with the party on issues. So people are just in a tough spot for that.
Thank you so much. That's Professor Charles Franklin of Marquette University Law School, the polar extraordinaire, the guy that knows all the statistics. Thanks so much, Charles. Really interesting stuff there, folks. If you want to get your two cents in on these most recent poll reactions and results, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I'm going to give you my reactions right now. I get it. And the thing, as I've been listening to network coverage, and a lot of the network coverage is, of course, focused on these undecided or independent or swing or low propensity voters. And they've got interviews that they've been running of these folks. And the theme that I seem to hear most frequently, especially from conservative and Republican women who are self-identifying as undecided, is something along the lines of, I'm a traditional conservative, and so I don't like Kamala Harris's policies, but Donald Trump is an unacceptable candidate. He is a bad person. Something along these lines. Not my language, theirs. And the thing that occurs to me is, I hope if you are out there and you are one of these undecided voters, and you think that Kamala Harris doesn't match up enough with your policy preferences, I ask you, go to the Washington Post. They've got a policy quiz that you can take. It removes the D's and the R's from the policies, and you go strongly agree to agree. We'll put that poll in our show notes for today. I challenge you to take that poll. See where you land. Do you actually agree more with Kamala Harris's policies than Trump's? I ask you to spend the additional 15 minutes looking at the 16-page policy proposal Donald Trump put together. 16 pages. That's the platform from the RNC. Versus the hundreds of pages of policy proposals. You don't have to read them all. They got an executive summary section that you can find at Kamala Harris's website. There is also in the New York Times a side-by-side comparison of both candidates on the most important policy questions organized by subject matter. We'll put both of those links in our show notes. You can find those at civicmedia.us. And you can check it out. So if you think, gosh, Donald Trump's bad guy, don't like him, not a good person, but I think I like his policies more, go check yourself. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're going to come back with David Marsteller, candidate in the 22nd Assembly District. You want to pay attention to this one, folks. Keep it locked. Coming up next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Hey,
I'ma keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves. You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got a barn burner of a show for you folks today, kicking it off with political editor for Civic Media, Dan Schaefer, creator and author of The Recombobulation Era. Dan has put together an absolutely comprehensive voter guide for each and every one of you. You can find that at civicmedia.us/voter guide. It breaks down all of the state assembly and Senate districts that you will find on your ballot this November 5th, or maybe even today, if you happen to be early voting. What's useful here and so important about this, of course, is that all of our legislative maps were redrawn following the 2020 census. And so for the first time in over a decade, Wisconsinites have fairer maps. And that means that a number of both state assembly and Senate districts are now up for grabs when they had been gerrymandered to benefit Republicans in the past. We've talked about two of those races so far, both nail biters. District 61 between Luann Byrd and Bob Donovan with razor thin margins, as well as District 51 between Elizabeth Groby and Todd Novak. Again, razor thin margins. But let's move up to the Green Bay area, Dan. And again, thanks for joining all of us today. This is District 89, Ryan Spade versus Pat Snyder. Tell us what's going on in District 89.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is, you know, there have been a number of districts that changed pretty significantly following the Wisconsin Supreme Court's decision to strike down the previous maps. And one of those is District 89 here. And I think the candidate or the Democratic candidate running here, Ryan Spouty, serves in the is an assistant district attorney in the Brown County District Attorney's Office. This change, this district used to include kind of the western shore of the actual Green Bay going up to Marinette. Now it's pretty concentrated within Brown County. So it is much more competitive district. You know, in the 89th here, Mandela Barnes won this district by less than 200 votes. So it's a very, very close district overall. He is running against Patrick Buckley, who has some experience. This is one of the things that I noticed, you know, this year for many of the assembly candidates in these toss-up districts. I think Republicans had to work a little harder to find candidates this year and found people that have a little bit more experience. And so Buckley, in this example here, he was the chairman of the Brown County Board since 2010 and was served for 15 years in the Green Bay Police Department. So, you know, this is going to be a very competitive race here. It's definitely a toss up. And I think that this, along with another toss up district, also in kind of the Green Bay, Brown County area, those are two of the most important seats. And I guess, you know, and I was up in Green Bay last week at Kamala Harris's rally in the city there. And I think there is a lot of enthusiasm among Democrats, especially because they have competitive maps there for the first time in a long time. So you have district in the 89th and then right next door in the 88th, where there are two very, very closely competitive districts that could go a long way towards determining which party has the majority.
Fascinating, Dan. I'm going to be up all night. I just know it. So many election results to keep track of. Let's move on to the Sheboygan area. We got District 26 with Joe Sheehan and Amy Binsfield. Tell us what's going on in this district.
Yeah, so Sheboygan was really a prime example of how the state was gerrymandered previously. Previously, there was a line right down the middle of the city that kind of split it into two light red districts and kind of denied representation to any Democrats there. Well, now all of Sheboygan is contained within one state assembly district, and it is a toss-up race. And it's a toss-up race that I think has been kind of shifting in favor of the Democrat in this one. Joe Sheehan seems like a pretty strong candidate for this district. He worked as the superintendent of the Sheboygan Area School District for about 17 years. Most recently also worked as the executive director of the Sheboygan County Economic Development Corporation. So he has very strong ties to this district. And then Amy Binsfield, she's a first term Republican state legislator. I'd heard some reports going on as well that there were some kind of infighting in the Sheboygan County GOP over this race. So yeah, I think this is a real opportunity for Democrats to flip a seat and for people in Sheboygan to have an opportunity for representation in ways they did not under previous maps.
One of the things, just a small digression here, Dan, that I'm so excited to see is that there are so many more competitive districts, both on the assembly and the Senate side. And whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, what that means is those elected officials will be more attentive to you. They actually have to run and earn your vote. And so as constituents, whether you're an independent swing voter, maybe I don't vote Republican, Democrat, whatever, you're going to get more attention in all of these districts. Let's see if we can squeeze a couple more in, Dan. District 30, up in Hudson, close to the Twin Cities, we got Allison Page and Shannon Zimmerman. Tell us more.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. This is, you know, definitely leans red a little bit, but this has been kind of moving closer to competitive territory because it is in the Twin Cities media market. And so I'm with this one, I'm wondering if there's going to be a little bit of a Tim Walz effect, let's say, because of the fact that this is a district that is, you know, it's about a 20-minute drive from St. Paul, right? From the edge of this district, from Hudson to St. Paul. And so I do wonder if this will have an effect where, you know, Tim Walz, a popular governor in Minnesota, you know, people may see him a whole lot in the media market up there. So this might be trending blue in a number of ways. And then Republican Shannon Zimmerman, incumbent in this race, he's served here since 2017. He's on the Joint Finance Committee, and the Joint Finance Committee has taken some really controversial votes in recent years. So there are a number of ways, you know, whether it's, you know, school funding, childcare, healthcare, Medicaid expansion, marijuana legalization,
PFAS funding,
you know, all sorts of up and down the line. There's a lot of really controversial votes that body has taken in recent years. So I do wonder if this one might be a little bit closer than some might expect, given the dynamics there. And the Democratic challenger, she has a great resume, too. She was the CEO of Western Wisconsin Health for 13 years and served on the River Falls School District Board in the area there.
Thanks so much, Dan. We're going to have to save a couple of these toss-up Senate districts for another appearance. Folks, you're always going to want to check out what we got coming up next on the Maggie Dawn Show. You can find out about all these races by going to civicmedia.us/voterguide. Up next, I've got Yari Aquino, because it sounds like change. She's from Emily's List. We're going to talk about other key state elections. Keep it locked. Thanks so much, Dan, here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.